The Heart of Happy Hollow, a collection of stories by Paul Lawrence Dunbar. The Interference of Patsy Ann. Patsy Ann Merriweather would have told you that her father, or more properly, her pappy, was a widower, and she would have added in her sad little voice, with her mournful eyes upon you, that her mother had been dead for nigh on to 4 years. Then you could have wept for Patsy, for her years were only 13 now, and since the passing away of her mother, she had been the little mother for her 4 younger brothers and sisters, as well as her father's housekeeper. But Patsy Ann never complained. She was quite willing to be all that she had been until such time as Isaac and Dora, Cassie and little John, should be old enough to care for themselves, and also to lighten some of her domestic burdens. She had never reckoned upon any other manner of release. In fact, her youthful mind was not able to contemplate the possibility of any other manner of change. But the good women of Patsy's neighborhood were not the ones to let her remain in this deplorable state of ignorance. She was to be enlightened as to other changes that might take place in her condition, and of the unspeakable horrors that would transpire with them. It was upon the occasion that little John had taken it into his infant head to have the German measles, just at the time that Isaac was slowly recovering from the chicken pox. Patsy Ann's powers had been taxed to the utmost, and Mrs. Caroline Gibson had been called in from next door to superintend the brewing of the saffron tea, and for the general care of the fretful sufferer. To Patsy Ann, then, in ominous tone, spoke this oracle.
"Patsy Ann, how your pappy doing since Matildy died?"
Matildy was the deceased wife.
"Oh, he get along all right. He was mighty broke up at the first, but he 'low now dat de house go on de same as if Mammy was a-livin'."
"Um-huh," disdainfully.
"Um-huh. Your Mammy been dead 4 years, ain't she?"
"Yes'm, mighty nigh."
"Um-huh. 4 years is a mighty long time for a colored man to wait. But when he do wait that long, it's all de worse when hit do come."
"Pap been woken right steady at de brickyard,"
said Patsy, in loyal defense against some vaguely implied accusation,
"and he done put some money in de bank."
"Bad sign, bad sign,"
and Mrs. Gibson gave her head a fearsome shake. But just then the shrill voice of little John calling for attention drew her away and left Patsy Ann to herself and her meditations. What could this mean? When that lady had finished ministering to the sick child and returned, Patsy Ann asked her,
"Miss Gibson, what do you mean by saying bad sign, bad sign?"
Again the oracle shook her head sagely. Then she answered,
"Child, you don't know de devilment dey is in dis world."
"But," retorted the child,
"my pappy ain't up to no devilment, 'cause he got a religion and been baptized."
"Mm-hmm," groaned Sister Gibson.
"Dat don't make a bit of difference. Who is any more man men dan de preachers demselves? Why, Brother Lias Scott done tempted matrimony 6 times already, and's looking round for de 7, and he a good man, too."
"Marion," said Patsy breathlessly.
"Yes, honey, Marion. And I's afeard your pappy's got notions in his head, and when a widower gets gals in his head, dey ain't no use of pestering with him, 'cause dey bout to have dey way."
"Marion," said Patsy to herself reflectively. "Marion."
She knew what it meant, but she had never dreamed of the possibility of such a thing in connection with her father.
"Marion."
And yet the idea of it did not seem so very unalluring. She spoke her thoughts aloud.
"But if Pap would marry Miss Gibson, then I'd get a chance to go to school. He allus saying he mighty sorry about me not going."
Dare now,
cried the woman, casting a pitying glance at the child.
"That's the last thing. He dares a feeling round now, you poor ignorant motherless child. You ain't never had no stepmother, and you don't know what hit means."
"But she'd take care of the chillen,"
persisted Patsy.
"Sich taking care of 'em as would be. She'd care for 'em to de graves. Nobody can't tell me nothing about stepmothers, 'cause I knows 'em. Dey ain't no woman going to take care of nobody else's child like she take care of her own."
And Patsy felt a choking come into her throat, and a tight sensation about her heart, while she listened as Mrs. Gibson regaled her with all the choice horrors that are laid at the door of stepmothers. From that hour on, one settled conviction took shape and possessed Patsy Ann's mind. Never, if she could help it, would she run the risk of having a stepmother. Come what may, Let her be compelled to do what she might. Let the hope of school fade from her sight forever and a day. But no stepmother should ever cast her baneful shadow over Patsy Ann's home. Experience of life had made her wise for her years, and so for the time she said nothing to her father. But she began to watch him with wary eyes, his goings out and his comings in, and to attach new importance to trifles that had passed unnoticed before by her childish mind. For instance, if he greased or blacked his boots before going out of an evening, her suspicions were immediately aroused, and she saw dim visions of her father returning on his arm the terrible ogress whom she had come to know by the name of stepmother. Mrs. Gibson's poison had worked well and rapidly. She had thoroughly inoculated the child's mind with the stepmother virus, but she had not at the same time made the parent widow-proof, a hard thing to do at best. So it came to pass that, with a mysterious horror growing within her, Patsy Ann saw her father black his boots more and more often and fare forth the nights and Sunday afternoons. Finally, her little heart could contain its sorrow no longer, and one night, when he was later than usual, she could not sleep. So she slipped out of bed, turned up the light, and waited for him, determined to have it out then and there. He came at last, and was all surprised to meet the solemn round eyes of his little daughter staring at him from across the table.
"Why, Lady Gal," he exclaimed, "what you doing up at this time?"
"I sat up for you. I got something to ax you, Pappy." Her voice quivered, and he snuggled her up in his arms.
"Oh, what's troubling my little lady gal now? Is the chillin' been bad?"
She laid her head close against his big breast, and the tears would come as she answered.
"No, sir. The chillin' been as good could be. But, oh, Pappy, Pappy, is you got gal in your head and a-goin' to bring me a stepmother?"
He held her away from him almost harshly, and gazed at her as he queried.
"Why, you poor baby, you! Who's been putting dis here foolishness in your head?"
Then his laugh rang out as he patted her head and drew her close to him again.
"If your pappy do bring a stepmother into dis house, God knows he'll bring the right kind."
"Dey ain't no right kind," answered Patsy.
"Oh, you don't know, baby. You don't know. Now you go to bed and don't you worry."
He sat up a long time, watching the candle sputter. Then he pulled off his boots and tiptoed to Patsy's bedside. He leaned over her.
"Poor little baby," he said. "What does she know about a stepmother?"
And Patsy saw him and heard him, for she was awake then and far into the night. In the eyes of the child, her father stood convicted. He had gal in his head and was going to bring her a stepmother. But it would never be. Her resolution was taken. She arose early the next morning, and after getting her father off to work as usual, she took the children into hand. First, she scrubbed them assiduously, burnishing their brown faces until they shone again. Then she tussled with their refractory locks, and after that she dressed them out in all the bravery of their best clothes. Meanwhile, her tears were falling like rain, though her lips were shut tight. The children off her mind, she turned her attention to her own toilet, which she made with scrupulous care. Then, taking a small tintype of her mother from the bureau drawer, she put it in her bosom, and leading her little brood, she went out of the house, locking the door behind her, and placing the key, as was her wont, under the doorstep. Outside, she stood for a moment or two, undecided, and then, with one long, backward glance at her home, she turned and went up the street. At the first corner, she paused again, spat in her hand, and struck the watery globule with her finger. In the direction the most of the spittle flew, she turned. Patsy Ann was fleeing from home and a stepmother, and fate had decided her direction for her, even as Mrs. Gibson's counsels had directed her course. The child had no idea where she was going. She knew no one to whom she might turn in her distress. Not even with Mrs. Gibson would she be safe from the horror which impended. She had but one impulse in her mind, and that was to get beyond the reach of the terrible woman, or was it a monster, who was surely coming after her. On and on she walked through the town with her little band trudging bravely along beside her. People turned to look at the funny group and smiled good-naturedly as they passed, and one man, a little more amused than the rest, shouted after them,
"Where you going, sis, with that orphan's home?"
But Patsy Ann's dignity was impregnable. She walked on with her head in the air, the desire for safety tugging at her heart. The hours passed, and the gentle coolness of morning turned into the fierce heat of noon, and still, with frequent rests, they trudged on, Patsy ever and anon using her divining hand, unconscious that she was doubling and redoubling on her tracks. When the whistles blew for 12, she got her little brood into the shade of a poplar tree and set them down to the lunch which, thoughtful little mother that she was, she had brought with her. After that, they all stretched themselves out on the grass that bordered the sidewalk, for all the children were tired out, and baby John was both sleepy and cross. Even Patsy Ann drowsed and finally dropped into the deep slumber of childhood. They looked too peaceful and serene for passers-by to bother them, and so they slept and slept. It was past 3 o'clock when the little guardian awakened with a start and shook her charges into activity. John wept a little at first, but after a while took up his journey bravely with the rest. She had just turned into a side street, discouraged and bewildered, when the round face of a colored woman standing in the doorway of a whitewashed cottage caught her eye and attention. Once more she paused and consulted her watery oracle, then turned to encounter the gaze of the round-faced woman. The oracle had spoken, and she turned into the yard.
"Where you going, honey? You certainly look like you plumb tuckered out. Come in and tell me all about yourself, you poor little thing. These your little brothers and sisters?"
"Yes'm," said Patsy Ann.
"Why, child, where are you a-going?"
"I don't know," was the truthful answer.
"You don't know? Now where you live?"
"Oh, I lives down on Douglas Street," said Patsy Ann, "and I's running away from home and my stepmother."
The woman looked keenly at her.
"What your name?" she said.
"My name's Patsy Ann Merriweather. And is you got a stepmother?"
"No," said Patsy Ann. "I ain't got none now, but I's certainly expecting one."
"What you know about stepmothers, honey?"
"Miss Gibson told me. They surely is awful, missus, awful."
"Miss Gibson ain't told you right, honey. You come in here and sit down. You ain't nothing more than a baby yourself, and you ain't got no right to be traipsing round this way."
Have you ever eaten muffins? Have you eaten bacon with onions? Have you drunk tea? Have you seen your little brother John taken up on a full bosom and rocked to sleep in the most motherly way with the sweetness and tenderness that only a mother can give? Well, that was Patsy Ann's case tonight. And then she laid them along like tenpins crosswise of her bed and sat for a long time thinking. To Maria Adams, about 6 o'clock that night, came a troubled and disheartened man. It was no less a person than Patsy Ann's father.
"Maria, Maria, what shall I do? Somebody done stole all my chillen."
Maria, strange to say, was a woman of few words.
"Don't you bother about the chillen," she said,
and she took him by the hand and led him to where the five lay sleeping calmly across the bed.
"They was running from home, and their stepmother," said she. "They run here from a stepmother and found a mother."
It was a tribute and a proposal all in one. When Patsy Ann awakened, the matter was explained to her, and with penitent tears she confessed her sins. "But," she said to Maria Adams,
"if you's de kin of folks that they make stepmothers out of, I ain't gwine to bother my head no more."
The End of The Interference of Patsy Ann, a tale by Paul Lawrence Dunbar. Read by Rick Kistner for Lit2Go on the web at fcit.usf.edu.